Daddy owned the farm. From the hog lot to the barn, from the barn to the rail, made his living by carrying the mail. Down the road, down the road, got a little pretty girl down the road. Walk the soles right off my shoe. I don't know why I love her so. The gal of mine lives down the road. Down the road, down the road. Well, I got a little pretty girl down the road.
WNRN Charlottesville.
89.9 WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg.
Listener supported independent music radio. WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Apparently, today's program is full of ridiculous people because we are, there's clapping in the background, or maybe there's something going on outside. Good morning to everyone. Thank you so much for listening to WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, a program today of which I know nothing about and will be unable to participate with except asking silly questions. We're going to be talking about a woman's perspective on a variety of topics. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our guest today, Elizabeth Irvin, she's from the Charlottesville Women's Initiative, where she's the program director. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks, Rick.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Over tucked against the wall in the corner, Amy Chestnut from the UVA Women's Center. She's the outreach coordinator and works specifically, I guess, with the prevention of eating disorders.
Yes, yes.
All right, get a lot closer than that.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And thank you for being here, especially on such a beautiful, warm, and dry Sunday. What happened to the 70 degrees of beautiful, sunny weather that was
forecasted? I know. Yesterday turned out pretty nice. Maybe we'll have a good afternoon.
That's what hope is all about.
That's right. That's what we're here for. Provide a little morning hope.
And that's the woman's perspective.
That's
right?
It. And we're done.
Women are there to provide hope for all the negative men in our lives. To teach that to children.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, you have an infant?
I have two children. I have a 4.5-year-old, actually an almost 5-year-old, and a 4-month-old.
Amy?
No.
No?
No.
Well, you know, I can't say that we can change everyone's life during the hour, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Maybe just a little information and some resources if they want to learn more.
There you go. All right. So we are going to be talking about a woman's perspective with Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut. Don't forget that at noon today, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. That's the best of 80s and 90s alternative music. Drew brings you the roots of alternative because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip to the times gone by with Les Temps Purdue, only on WNRN at noon. All right, ladies, what makes something a woman's issue? Is that possible? Hang on just a second. Elizabeth, I need you to answer that question for me because apparently the microphone over here is not at its best.
Okay. Can you hear me? How am I doing?
Goodness gracious. Why did everything all of a sudden go crazy? All right, fire away.
What makes a woman's issue is the question. I think it's a tricky thing to answer because I think that there isn't really anything out there that is solely for women or for men anymore in this day and age. I do think that there are things that women might focus on stereotypically more than women or more than men do, but I actually think that there's a focus of all kinds of things. And our two agencies, I think we really try to work with the issues that women bring to us, but there are no issues that would only be for women and not for men.
Do you agree with that, Amy? Sorry, you're back to fire up.
Yes. Sorry, I absolutely agree with that. You know, the way I see it, and my background is public health, too. I'm looking sometimes at just the epidemiology and the evidence of what's affecting men and women. But just because, for instance, with eating disorders, 10% of those with eating disorders are men, that's still really important.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think marketing and the media that we see affect both men and women. And I think men are now being targeted even more because we've seen how much the marketing works with women. You know, mm-hmm. that the advertisers have seen that. And so I think it's something that you just have to focus your, you know, I focus most of my time on women's issues. But we certainly do outreach and discuss these issues and how they affect men.
So all the topics, or every time I hear that phrase on the news or use it here myself as, oh, that's a woman's issue. Not true.
I'd say not true. I really, you know, it's funny, I appreciate being invited, Rick, and that you wanted to talk about things that are important to women. But I guess I would just add that I hope what we're talking about is universal. Most of the issues that we deal with at the Women's Initiative, which are really related to mental health, it's not that women have more mental health issues than men. Our agency is serving primarily a female population, but many of the issues are going to be relevant to men as well.
All right, well, let's jump on an issue here.
Okay.
Let's talk about something, because what I'm hearing is that there's not a woman's issue, but there are certainly women's perspective on specific issues. So I want to jump on one that I've seen in the news recently. I think I found it on maybe on the Women's Center website, listed as a topic of conversation. Let's talk about alcohol consumption, something that to me, anyway, the problems of overindulgence in alcohol consumption have bad outcomes for both genders, but might have different perspectives on what the bad or some of the bad outcomes might be. Is that fair?
You know, it's an interesting way. I've never seen it put that way. I would say that historically, a lot of research around substance abuse in general has been related to men. And what we're finding is that there is a significant portion of the female population that also has substance abuse issues. But I think that treatment is slowly catching up to that. In the last 15, 20 years, we found that there are specific treatments that are more effective for women. For instance, women-only groups rather than co-ed groups for treatment. And I think that obviously there are some issues around family and children where we see disproportionately that women can be stigmatized in a different way for substance abuse and therefore potentially lose custody of their children and things of that sort, which is not unique because men can lose parental rights as well, but I think you see that in some of what happens.
Yeah. I would say, too, at the university, thinking about students, what we really look to is social marketing, ways to educate people about how to be healthy while they're drinking. So the Office of Health Promotion at Student Health does a campaign that shows things like, you know, 80-some percent, and I'm just making that statistic up, I don't have it with me, of students eat a meal before they go out and drink and those kinds of things so that we can help encourage protective behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece is also, you know, a lot of talk about consent, because if people are getting really drunk and then there's some sort of sexual activity, you know, are you consenting to that? And I would say those are the pieces that I interact most with around the university.
But does that make it a topic where you need to discuss some of the negative behaviors, that they have different perspectives based on gender? That if men want to talk about it, and again, if you want to talk about the, you know, whether or not you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that is non-gender specific, and whether there's another
right
phrase for that, I don't know. Please educate me.
Well, right. If somebody has a diagnosis of a substance abuse disorder, then you're right. That's not genderized. There's that's a word. There, you know, both men and women would have the same criteria that they would meet.
But
for
what I'm thinking of
is,
especially here at the university.
Okay.
Especially if you want to talk about some of the most recent negative conversations, some of the conversation, the news that happened up at the small Ohio football slash town, is that if you drink too much, that there are certain things that women need to watch out for because of the behavior in that are different from what the men need to watch out for. Is there a different perspective on excessive alcohol consumption that is different for genders?
Again, this is one of those times where I'm going to say maybe I'm speaking more for myself than for the Women's Initiative, but and I'm just one woman's perspective. I would say not really. What I would say is that there is a perception that women are more likely to be, for instance, sexually assaulted than men, and the statistics bear that out, that women are more likely, and yet men can also be overindulging and find themselves in a situation where they might not be able to consent. So I don't want to spend the whole hour doing this with you, Rick, saying, well, not really, but you're right. I mean, women, especially around college campuses, are looking at consent. They're looking at safety. Men should be doing the same. We end up seeing in the news some of these really horrific situations where women have gotten themselves in situations, and there's no excuse for somebody else perpetrating on you just because you're in that situation, but it can be a conversation around safety.
Yeah, and I would say I think that it's important to have programs for women and for men individually and then together, because I think there are issues that women might, you know, when you talk within a group of women about the experience of going out and dating, that's one experience. When guys can talk, about those experiences together, that can be one discussion, and then having something together. I know with body image, we see that discussions with men and women together are really interesting. Mm-hmm. They're fascinating and they're really helpful, but it's also really wonderful to have a group of women talking together because it's a safe space for them to share.
Right.
This is Rick Moore on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We're here today with Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut, both involved in local women's-based programs, Charlottesville Women's Initiative, as well as UVA Women's Center, trying to get a woman's perspective on some topics and discuss if and what those different perspectives might be. 979-0919, if you'd like to call up and participate in the discussion today. 979-0919, 877 WNRN rocks. What made you chuckle at that?
It's a great phone number. I've never
yes,
heard it.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Dial it up right now if you'd like. That's for those who need the toll-free line. Amy, you mentioned how certain programs, and we were talking a moment ago about the alcohol consumption and some of the dangers that might go along with that, and how group of women, and then a group of men, and then coming together. You know, as we talk about a woman's perspective, are there topics that need to have separation because, or why? You know, what would be the reason that those conversations need to be separated, at least in the beginning?
Well, I would say, you know, in terms of the work that I do, I think one discussion that is important to have separate and, again, together, it's just a different discussion, so I want to make that clear, is, you know, about body image, about media literacy. Women are targeted more so than men
by advertisers. What is that, media literacy?
So that's understanding magazines, ads, advertising, and the effect that they have on women and men. And men now are being targeted more. You can see that if you pick up any sort of health magazine that's supposed to be for men that's not really about health. But basically, the information is trying to show what an advertiser tries to do when they sell a product. Something's wrong with you, and I have something that will fix it or make it better. So you see those images constantly, right? And now that I think they're almost ludicrous. You know, you see, you know, mascara that will change your life, or a car that will make you get, a hot girl, or whoever, you know, that kind of stuff. And the more that we see thousands of those images a day, and so that has an impact on us and how we, I personally think, but I also teach this within the program, is that we move from an internal indicators in our system to external ones. So let's say we keep seeing images of really, really thin women that are 98% of the population could never look like that. And actually, the women themselves never look like that. Cindy Crawford is famous for saying, "I wish I looked like Cindy Crawford," because the pictures are so photoshopped. But we see those images, and then, you know, you hear people saying, "I want J-Lo's butt. I want Jennifer Aniston's arms." I mean, and so you're really, people start to sort of get away from health. In reality, what health looks like, they're looking at this ultra-thin beauty ideal, and guys are looking at this beefy, muscular ideal.
Is it okay to laugh at that?
I mean, it's fun.
Or should it be, you know, should I be... feel as though I'm contributing to the problem if I'm chuckling at it?
I don't think so. I laugh at it all the time. I mean, I look at images and I educate about images, and they make me laugh. But at the same time, I think there's two pieces. People should know about it. They should recognize it. And also, even if we know about it, all the students I talk to, they know about Photoshop. You know, we're not surprised by it. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't impact them. And, you know, within our primitive brain and how we look at images over and over, you know, they really absorb that, like all of us.
All right. Today here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, our guest Elizabeth Irvin, and that was Amy Chestnut, as we talk about, I guess we're talking about images and how that plays into the male, I don't want to say versus female perspective,
no.
But certainly different issues that go along with that. I'll be right back because I want to finish up or continue on with that part of the conversation.
And support for independent music radio, WNRN, comes from Brown Subaru, your locally owned and operated Subaru dealer since 1981. For the third consecutive year, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has recognized every 2012 Subaru model as a top safety pick. Brown is the only dealer that gives you state inspections for life. You can test drive any all-wheel drive model at Brown Subaru on 29 North in front of Sam's Club or online at brownautos.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me take a moment and thank Atlantic Organic Natural Sleep Shop, featuring their natural and chemical-free organic sleep studio with environmentally conscious mattresses and bedding, including eco-friendly hardwood platform beds. That's Atlantic Organic. They're at 421 West Main Street, Charlottesville. Their website is AtlanticOrganicSleepShop.com. It's bedtime, naturally. All right, back with our guests, Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut. Amy, we were talking about body image. That was a sort of a follow-up to my question about separating the genders for important conversations, men, then women, and then together. Why does something like that, because the conversation was that both genders are being tricked into thinking that this is the image that they need. So, Amy Elizabeth, why would we need to have separate conversations to start with?
I think it's a great question, and it might also answer to the question of why a women's center and why the women's initiative? Why not just human center or something like that? And I think what we've found is that women, again, thinking about the culture that in which we live in, we do, unfortunately, have a tendency to be different when men are present, to feel less safe, to be truly honest, to be introspective, to be able to share with each other around certain vulnerable issues. Eating and body image is one of those. Substance abuse would be another, or other mental health issues, healthy relationships, and just learning how to be assertive and effective in a relationship. We run a group at the Women's Initiative each week related to that topic. And I absolutely agree with Amy that that is a really interesting and important topic to also do with both men and women in the room. But it is a different type of conversation that can happen when it's only women. And I would say also when it's only men. There's some wonderful men's empowerment groups actually that have run here in Charlottesville as well. And there's a group that ran for many years that was a co-ed divorce group that ran. And so it's not that you only need women's groups or only men's. Sometimes having people in the same room gives you a different perspective and a different conversation. But people often need to begin with people of the same gender to have that common experience and that sense of safety.
It's Elizabeth Irvin from the Charlottesville Women's Initiative, where she's the program director. This is Rick Moore here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Dial us up if you have a question or want to make a comment as we talk about a woman's perspective on various issues. That's 979-0919-877-WNRN rocks. Amy, we're talking about having the different conversations. One of the things that I found interesting in reading the Women's Center website, by the way, what is the people want to go to the Women's Center, what's the, do you know the website?
Yes, it's womenscenter.virginia.edu.
And Elizabeth, for the Women's Initiative?
www.thewomensinitiative.org.
So I'm at the Women's Center website and talking about the various programs, one of which being prevention of eating disorders, and how there was a gathering sometime in the past year, and that a father stood up to talk. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mm-hmm. just women. As we talk about mixing the genders for mm-hmm. important topics, it, you know, discussed the variety of people who stood up and what their roles were. But I found that interesting that a father stood up. Mm-hmm. And so talk about that for a minute in how it's not just different genders, it's different roles that people play.
Absolutely. You know, before we talk about that, I did want to say that our program works with eating disorders, but it also works on the spectrum. And I think that's really important to note that we focus on creating a healthy relationship with exercise, food, and one's body. And people can be all along the line of between health and, you know, possibly diagnosable eating disorders, which I would say are a small percent, important but small, at the end of that spectrum. In the middle, there's disordered eating and disordered exercise. So what did that looks like? That sort of flirting with behaviors that are not really supporting your health, like restricting food or maybe once a week, you know, binging and finding some sort of purging behavior to deal with that. You might not be diagnosable as an eating disorder, but you're kind of playing with fire in a way. And we really work with prevention because we know that we work with an evidence-based program. If we can get to people that are in that disordered place, we can help prevent them moving along to eating disorders. Because once you get to eating disorders, you can absolutely recover, but it's really challenging and it's very resource intensive to do so. So I just wanted to say that beforehand. And what was your question again?
Well, we were talking about the fact that it was, I won't say highlighted, but it was mentioned
right,
that a father also spoke up mm-hmm. at the gathering for
yes.
for folks with this. So it's not always just just male versus female, but sometimes it's the importance of the different role. And I want to get into, you know, move on with yeah. this mm-hmm. About the role and how things change your perspective where you are in life. But talk about the father, mm-hmm. Because the father versus daughter is often considered a very important role when it's missing.
Right.
We'll talk about when it's there.
Absolutely. Well, I think so. The event you're mentioning is called Perfect Illusions, and we have it every year in November. It's usually the first Wednesday in November, and we have about 50 people come. It's gotten quite big, and people can share their stories related to disordered eating, exercise, and body image. And we have mothers and fathers. We have students, UVA students, certainly. People come from Lynchburg College. College, Virginia Tech. We have had parents come every year, including a father, that talks about the impact of his daughter's experience with an eating disorder. And I think it really highlights the fact that all of these issues, these women's issues or health issues, affect everyone that's connected to that person. Mm-hmm. So the importance of needing support, finding resources for family members, friends, you know, a lot of times I have people come to my office saying, I'm really worried about a friend. What do I do and how can I support them? And we have really specific guidance we can give of what to do and not to do to sort of navigate those issues. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I also have parents call me and also need support and advice. And a lot of times saying, you know, it's helpful to go talk to someone just for you to deal with these issues with your children.
And that's Amy Chestnut, Outreach Coordinator at UVA's Women's Center. We also have Elizabeth Irvin from the Women's Initiative here in Charlottesville. Elizabeth, talk about, you know, Amy mentions it's good for other people who aren't specifically affected by the problem, but those who also need assistance. Because one of the things that I found, you know, doing my homework is that an eating disorder is often considered a mental illness.
That's right. So if you look at the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistic Manual that's used by mental health practitioners, there's a whole section on disordered eating. And I really appreciated what you said about the spectrum, because it isn't just about working with those people who have the diagnosable disorder, but around the whole, the way that really all of society and all of us are looking at food and wellness. I'm going to shift a little bit and say I'm looking forward to working more closely with Amy in terms of what's already been going on at the university as we gear up for a new program with the Women's Initiative. We are going to be in the new Jefferson School City Center, which has its open house next Saturday from 10 in the morning to 1. I'm going to put a little plug in there. But we are just two rooms in this wonderful big building that's been it's been a public-private partnership, and it's been redesigned and reconfigured to be really a city community organizational center with 9 different tenants, including Carver Rec Center and PVCC will have classes, and the African American Heritage Center. I wanted to list all of them, I'll forget somebody. JABA Literacy Center. We are going to be specifically within Martha Jefferson's Hospital's Star Hill Center, and they're going to be looking at childhood obesity in particular. And we have a therapist that will be there doing mental health work for the whole family system around health and wellness. And again, it's not only for folks who have a disorder, but for folks who just want to get healthy and start to walk again or start to look at their food and different ways to cook in a more healthy way or talk to their children for the first time really about eating as a family in a different way. So
let me
might
talk,
have got a little off topic.
Well,
here,
that's
so.
All right. That's what I do here.
Yeah,
that seems to be my thing is to get off topic.
Good. That's
again,
the
we
fun
are
part.
Talking. I'm looking for conversation about a woman's perspective to a variety of issues. Elizabeth Irvin from Charlottesville Women's Initiative. Amy Chestnut from UVA's Women's Center. Talk about, you know, I mentioned the roles that people play, but it's not just whether you're a male or a female in your role. Talk about the woman's perspective on topics of importance based on your current role in life.
That's a great
whether
question.
You are your age, whether or not you are a parent, and I'll let you know, Amy. Let's start with you. At what because you're working, have a lot of work directly with college students. Mm-hmm. What are some of the topics that are specifically important to that age group and that gender?
Right. Well, you know, I work more with women, so I'll definitely talk about that. I'm not sure about men. I would say the first word that popped up into my mind is perfectionism, especially the students I see at UVA. They're all brilliant. They're smart. You know, they've gotten into UVA. But there's a challenge with that. And perfectionism, I think, can be applied to a lot of different things. You know, I think the focus on appearance certainly is one of those. Grades, you know, really looking at making sure that you have A's, but maybe not, you know, are you learning what you want to learn? Why did you come to college? What are you, you know, what do you want to use this for? So it kind of funny in a way. A lot of times when I'm working with students, I feel like I'm saying, you need to go take a nap. Right. You know, you need to relax. It's different from a lot of other health education roles because they're so hyper smart and on it, and they're doing so many different things. And I feel like the work that I do with them is really trying to create healthy coping mechanisms. So instead of using some unhealthy ones, which could be alcohol, consumption, or again, management of food through restrictive dieting and all these different things, helping them to create healthy coping mechanisms while they live their life. So that could be mindfulness. We do a lot of education on mindfulness.
What is mindfulness?
It's really the awareness. I'd say there's two parts to mindfulness. One is awareness of what's going on, and you could do mindful eating. So, a lot of times when we're rushed, right, we sit down, we eat our food really quickly, we might all of a sudden feel really, really full and go, oh, why did I do that, right? Everyone's had that experience. But mindfulness is being in the moment and eating your food and enjoying it and eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full. And also a second piece that I think is important to add to that is compassion. So we all have that self-talk, right? We have the thing going on in our head and that was stupid, or, why did I do that, or that kind of thing. And really looking at that and looking at the decisions that you make and being compassionate, about that, and then moving on.
So I'd like to jump in. I think it's so interesting that what we end up doing is very, very similar. The Women's Initiative, we're a mental health organization. We spend a lot of time with our clients, both in individual and in group, with mindfulness-based activities, with teaching both compassion and awareness, and that whole spectrum of how do you bring your mind back to a place where it's serving you versus it hurting you, because so often our mind is a big piece of mental health and what's getting in our way. Mm-hmm. Because what ultimately happens is, can we have good coping skills to face what's happening in our lives? The mm-hmm. difference is the population. You say perfectionism. For our population, it's really survival for so many. So we work with women 18 and over who are uninsured or underinsured, vast majority very low income community residents. And so it's not about, it's just such a different, mm-hmm. it's just a different struggle that brings them in the door. Mm-hmm. Often, how am I going to pay rent? How am I caring for my kids today? I'm overwhelmed. I'm depressed. Now I can't get out of bed. So we end up with mental health issues as a result mm-hmm. of life overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And yet what we're doing mm-hmm. are very similar things, because we are also looking at just basic coping skills, basic ways of, again, kind of retraining your mind to be helpful rather than hurtful.
Right.
It's Elizabeth Irvin. She's from the Charlottesville Women's Initiative. We also have Amy Chestnut from UVA's Women's Centers. We talk about various topics and the woman's perspective on them. This is WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
And support for WNRN today coming from T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks here for being with us today as we talk with Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut about a woman's perspective on various issues. Elizabeth, you followed up Amy's comments about perfectionism with survival and I guess low income, et cetera. How does the role of a woman's perspective change as she ages? Because we've gone from, Amy started the conversation talking about UVA students.
Right.
And then we move on to women who may have low incomes.
Mm-hmm.
But let's add into that, whether or not a child is involved, and you're welcome to bring that into the conversation.
Sure.
But now you're talking about career.
Right.
Whether the career is, homemaker or, caregiver to your children, or you're actually leaving the house to go get a paycheck from someone else.
Right.
How does that affect a woman's perspective on a variety of topics? You don't even need to get on a specific topic.
No, sure. Well, I think we know that, you know, if you look at Erickson and the work around development through the transitions of life, there's eight stages over the course of a person's life, and college is certainly one where a person's really self-absorbed, figuring out who am I, what do I want to be, and how do I individuate from my parents, and still working on that. And then as you head into the next ages in your life, you're looking at how am I going to create a family? If so, what's that going to be like? Certainly, I'll speak from my own experience as a mother of two young children, very focused on just getting them out the door to get to, you know, preschool, or are they fed? And so your role at this point, at my point in life, is very focused internally in my family. For folks who have who don't have children and are looking at the 20s and 30s as a time of career and who do I want to be, and again thinking about specifically the population that we serve, it's not often a question of what's my career. It's more, can I make ends meet? Am I going to be able to just, you know, live a life that's fulfilling to me right now, even with all of the stresses of not having a living wage? You know, so there's just very different to say what is a woman's perspective. Also, you have to take into effect, you know, someone's socioeconomic, their cultural reality, everything. So I don't know if I can just speak to one. But then you move on into 40s and 50s, and you're in a different role, thinking about the second phase of your life, looking at, you know, looking back and saying, have I done what I wanted? Saying I still have years ahead, what would I like that to look like? For women, especially who have had children, as children head out of the home, it's often a kind of a time of crisis. I have been so much a part of my children's lives. Now, who am I? What do I want to do with this next part of my life? And then, obviously, when you head into an aging population, it's, you know, kind of integrating your whole life perspective and thinking through end-of-life issues and relationships at that point. So very different over the whole life spectrum, I would say, for men and for women.
Mm-hmm. Amy Chestnut from UVA's Women's Center. Are there specific topics that do come to mind that are very important, near the top of the list for someone who may be in their 20s and 30s and moving into a career, as opposed to someone who's later in life and maybe moving out of the career or has been out of the career for a while?
You know, it's one thing I think of, you know, sure, I think there's probably some differences and some similarities, obviously. You know, a lot of what I see is students really wanting to know who they're going to be, but it's the process. And I did the exact same thing. I mean, I was, what am I going to do when I grow up kind of thing? But yet I had to go through all these different experiences and to get there. You know, it's not just I'm going to be a teacher or I'm going to, you know, there are a small percent of people that do that and stick to it. But I think the most of us kind of, you know, have to go through life and that teaches us where we want to be. I see a lot of similarities between the two groups. I know I keep jumping back to body image, but that's really, you know, eating and body image are really my focus. You know, I think there's pressure now on women that are older, where people say, you know, 50 is the new 30, mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff, that you cannot really, some people feel you cannot really get old. You know, there is no more grandma. You know, when you see people of that age in the media, they're not like the grandma look, you know what I mean? They're, right. I mean, I think of people that are, I think Martha Stewart's in her 70s, and you wouldn't necessarily know that. And so I think that's kind of an interesting change. Some people call it the desperate housewives syndrome or experience or whatever, that now with HGTV and the focus on appearance that continues through other ages, that people, you know, a larger percent of older women are having eating disordered eating and eating disorders than you. And I think that's surprising to most people. But I think, again, the focus on being young and looking a certain way is just extending.
And specific to our population too, Rick, in terms of a stage of life and a particular issue, one thing that we've seen are quite a bit women who are in their 50s, maybe even early 60s, who are now no longer partnered, or maybe have never been, but are in a place where they've lost a job. So since 2008, obviously, unemployment issues being a very big issue in this community. And at that age, it's very hard to get reemployed. Mm-hmm. And so looking at how can I reinvent myself in a culture that really looks to employing people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, much so, more so than a new hire in your 50s and 60s, and you know, then looking at what will this mean for me if I can't find a job.
Mm-hmm. Here on WNRN, we talk with Amy Chestnut and Elizabeth Irvin, various topics and getting a woman's perspective on them. Amy at UVA's Women's Center, the outreach coordinator, Elizabeth at the program director for Charlottesville's Women's Initiative. How about, you know, we're continuing to talk about age and how perspectives of different topics, it may be change in importance as you move along, but it seems that health insurance in the last few years, a specific focus on that. And Elizabeth, you work specifically with people coming in who do not have health insurance. Mm-hmm. Do you have to promote the Women's Initiative to them and tell them that's not a problem? Are you affected in any way by the grants that you get because of health insurance and what you do or do not take?
That's an interesting question. So when the Women's Initiative started 5 years ago, we actually did take insurance and then serve folks with who did not have insurance. And what we've noticed is we live in this community that has 400-plus private practice therapists in town who take insurance, who are working with that population, whereas there's very few, if any. You know, the Women's Center has a small number of counseling spots for community members, and we work with them as well. And then there's some that happens over at Northridge at UVA. So there's a few spots. And Region 10 obviously serves an important role for severe and persistent mental illness. But most of the people that were calling were really in a bind because there weren't enough services to go around for uninsured. So we've now come to focus on that in the last few years because the need is so great. And I would say that the main thing is for people to know that we are out there, because for many people, they think, well, I don't have insurance. How am I going to afford that? I'm not even going to be able to think about mental health care for me because I can't even really afford, you know, whatever else is happening in my life. And I would say what's interesting is looking at the Affordable Care Act and Virginia making choices that it's going to make over the next year will have a huge impact on most of the clients that we see and the community at large that are uninsured here in Charlottesville, because there is the potential to become insured, which is wonderful, both for primary physical care and also for mental health care. And the Women's Initiative will then be shifting in the next year and a half to accept Medicaid, Medicare, and more private insurance, with the hope that Virginia will do as it should and our population will become insured in the next, you know, 18 months or so.
I found it interesting that the Women's Initiative gets more than 50% of your, I guess, workable dollars from private donors.
That's right. So the Women's Initiative, we're so fortunate to have the support of individuals here in this community who believe that mental health is something that everybody, you know, it's an issue for all of us. 1 in 4 people in the United States in a given year will have a mental health diagnosis. And we know that it mostly goes untreated, especially for those people who are uninsured or low income. And so people recognize that and are willing to support us so that we can do this work, because our client base cannot pay for the services. It's, you know, if you go out in the community and you just want to see a local therapist, the average pay is somewhere between $80 and $100 an hour. Our clients, they pay a sliding scale down to $5 a session, and that's only possible because of the generous support of people in the community and grants. We receive grants from the United Way, Charlottesville Area Community Foundation, so many of the local organizations. And we fundraise, and we're doing events and all kinds of things, but we are indebted to this community for their support. It's really the only way we're able to do what we do.
And I would say that's true for the eating disorders program. We got a generous donation five plus years ago, and through that we've been able to start the program. And I was hired, and everything comes from donations and very small grants through the university parents committee. So, you know, it's a shoestring budget really, but it impacts a lot of people. And of course, our area is very different and very similar at the same time. But
right. Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of the programs, it's always challenging because you really are working with trying to get support and leadership, you know, in Charlottesville and through alumni and things to support our work so that we can keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
11:47 here on the Wake Up Call with our guests, Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut, talking about a variety of topics with the woman's perspective. Ladies, I want to come back to health insurance in just a moment, but I want to toss a few topics out there and see where that takes us in the conversation. Single parenting, because for many people, it's the mother. There are a few odd situations where it's the father, at least in stereotypical viewpoints. I have no idea what the percentage is, but I know several. It's not like, oh yeah, there's that guy down the street. I know several people who I would consider friends or close work acquaintances. They are the parent.
Mm-hmm.
What is the woman's perspective on this? And again, if we need to go individual versus representing your organization, understood. But talk about single parenting and the challenges that go with that and the women's perspective.
Well, I think it's a huge issue for many of the women that we serve. More than half of the women that we serve are parents, and more than half of them are single parenting. So it's a big stress on the lives of many of the women that we are working with. And I think that has lots of layers. It's a financial stress. It is how do I get through my day and take care of these children completely by myself without a break stress. It's how do I balance the work that I need to do to pay for the rent with the children. So it's a huge issue for many people. And I think it's one of the things that we do at the Women's Initiative, going back to kind of the coping skills and the mindfulness, knowing that you can't solve many of those big issues that day in and day out, that will be what our clients will be facing. But it's how do I take mindfulness or some other coping strategy to just get through these days with a little bit less of the stress that can then create things like abuse and neglect, or that can send me to the fridge to get my bottle of wine. Can I do something instead when I'm feeling overwhelmed so that I can continue to make it through this day? So it's a huge issue.
Is there anything, any part of that conversation that is a specific problem for a female, for a woman who may have more concern over that than a single dad?
No, I would say if anything, one, we know that there are more single women dealing with parenting issues than men. So in that sense, it gets talked about much more often for women than men. In some ways, men are actually in a more unique environment, because if they are the single dad, it's not like they can call up seven other single dads usually and say, hey, let's talk about how hard this is. They're often much more isolated and in a bubble doing this work. So one benefit to being a woman who's trying to parent by themselves is that they often can find more support. As I say that, though, I'm thinking about the women that I know both personally and also the clients that I see, and I would say they don't have time for that support. Part of the problem with being a single parent is you are just going, trying to just get through each day and, food on the table for your child, getting to your work. So that taking the luxury of a time to call and get support from a friend, even if you're a woman and happen to have those friends to call in a different way than maybe a man would, it's just making that time and actually being able to do it.
979-0919 if you want to call up with a question or a comment. 11:50 here on the Wake Up Call is Elizabeth Irvin and Amy Chestnut here talking about a woman's perspective on a variety of topics.
Today's programming is supported by the law firm of Goodman, Allen, and Folletti. With offices in Charlottesville and throughout Virginia, Goodman, Allen, and Folletti is dedicated to meeting the complex legal needs of healthcare providers, small businesses, and individuals. Goodman, Allen, and Folletti. The power to represent, the people to make it happen. Online at goodmanallen.com.
All right, back with our guests, Amy Chestnut and Elizabeth Irvin. Community outreach, certainly an important part of what any organization does in Charlottesville. But the two of you took the time to come on the program, so let's talk about community outreach for your two programs. Because that is a specific women's perspective, right? It's what your groups do. It's who you represent. and it's who's in the studio. So who wants to go first?
You can go ahead.
I'll go first. So, yes, I work at the Women's Center. It's the Academic Women's Center. It's across from the White Spot on the corner. And the Women's Center's mission is about creating change in the individual and in communities. And I think what's exciting about looking at all of our programming is that we have in each program, we're focusing on a different level of change. So whether it be in counseling services where someone's working with a counselor for that individual change, I, with body image, am working with group change and cultural change, and some individual. We have sexual assault, domestic violence services that provide outreach and education. We have a young women's leadership program that pairs college students with middle school, college women with middle school girls, and their classes attached to that. And we have oftentimes some international travel kind of programs. So we're all doing kind of different things, but they're all connected to this idea of change, creating change. For our program, I am the coordinator for the eating disorders program. We also call it body positive programming because really when we go out into to the students, we're talking about, again, creating that healthy relationship with exercise, eating, and body. And we're doing an intervention. So we try to do evidence-based programming so that we know what we're doing works with the students. It's been replicated and we collect data and those kinds of things. But we also provide programming to all different kinds of groups that are just interested in having us talk. For instance, sororities. We had several sororities ask us to come and talk about media literacy and body image. And now I'm starting to be able to really partner with a lot of organizations to do this work. Our main partner I just want to spotlight is the UVA Coalition on Eating Disorders and Exercise Concerns. I think it's an amazing group of people that represent all across the university, and we all do these events like Perfect Illusions, which I mentioned earlier.
So the Women's Initiative is the Charlottesville, you know, kind of town version in some ways of the Women's Center, and yet kind of came from very different places. So we are primarily a mental health agency, but we're striving to provide mental health education and outreach and social support services for women 18 and over, primarily those of whom who are low income and uninsured. And so the heart of our program is really the counseling, and we provide up to as many sessions as people need, though the majority of people in 12 sessions or fewer are working on transforming challenges into change. So it's also a focus on what's a realistic goal that we can work on and improve in your life. And primarily, our clients come in with diagnoses of depression and anxiety. The vast majority have trauma in their history. And we really try and pair people with the right therapist and look at uniquely tailoring a treatment plan so that they get the best care. And in an effective way, we also use evidence-based work. And we run three different support groups ongoing, a Spanish-speaking support group, a healthy relationships group, and then a group that looks specifically at stress management tools. And then throughout the year, we have different offerings. Right now, in another couple weeks, I think it's the 29th of January, we have a setting goals workshop as you come into the new year. And many of these offerings are free. We also have what's called the living room, in which each week we have different things where people can come and just gather and be, because we know that when you are less isolated, you are much less likely to be suffering from mental health issues, or it's a great resource when you're feeling the effects of a mental health issue. So we have knitting twice a week, which is free. You can come and learn and to knit, that kind of thing. And I would say our community outreach really focuses on stress management. So we do stress management workshops to frontline providers, schools and nurses and social workers, because we know that caregivers often are women, but also are often taking on a lot of the burden of the people that they're serving. And so if we can give them stress management tools, hopefully they are also more able to do their work, but also then able to teach that to their to the people they work with. And then we also do those for community groups as well. And we're really excited about a couple initiatives, one being the Jefferson School City Center, which is opening next week. It's a really wonderful. I hope everybody will take the time to go and check out the open house next Saturday, the 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we also have a great partnership with the Charlottesville Free Clinic, providing integrated care, primary care and mental health care over at the Free Clinic now. That's been going for a few months. So just really trying to help bridge for folks who may be dealing with stress in their lives but won't want to come to see somebody for mental health, we really like to make all the effort we can to get to them so that they can get the help that they need.
It's Elizabeth Irvin. She's with Charlottesville Women's Initiative. She's the program director. Before that, Amy Chestnut, outreach coordinator at UVA's Women's Center. Ladies, one of the things that you often hear is that we've tipped the balance too much. It used to be that men had all the, you know, all the good side of the seesaw, and women were the ones who were suffering, and now we've gone the other way. Huh. We have as many women in Congress as we've ever had before.
There's still way less than half. I just will point out.
Well, is that part of the, you know, the response? So the question is that we haven't actually balanced things out enough, yeah. And we still need, you know, to keep doing what we're doing to try and make things fair?
I would say absolutely. I mean, I think that the statistics are still that women make, what, 82 cents on the dollar as a man, you know, in the same profession and the same with the same experience. I think those things are still concerning. I think having our representatives reflect the population is really important, you know, so whether that be women or other groups, I think that's something to think about.
No, I totally agree with Amy. I think we have a long way to go. But I would agree with you in some ways, Rick. It's interesting to me that Charlottesville has as many agencies in town that really have this women-specific focus. And you asked before the program started, where's the men's center? Mm-hmm. And I do think that's an issue, that if I'm a man and I'm looking around and I see all these resources for women and nothing for me, where am I going to go to get this help? And I would say we have some work to do, because mm-hmm. part of the reason that the Women's Center or the Women's Initiative focuses on women is because we know women are more likely to come for help. They're often the navigator for health for their whole family system. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, you know, we'll see a man being sort of dragged into our office kicking and screaming to go to couples therapy, for instance. It's not my, I don't have a problem. She has a problem, you know. But we have a lot
I say that all the time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So does my husband. So we, teasing, honey. So we have a lot of work to do, I think, in terms of marketing and the culture to get to a place where there is less stigma for men, for instance, around mental health or around getting help for your child's disordered eating. Yeah. Often that's going to be the mom that's really pushing that along versus the dad. And again, that's a stereotype. But these agencies, I think, have popped up in response because women come forward saying, where's my help? Yeah. Much more so than a man does.
Well, let me jump in real quick. By the way, folks, just a moment, a minute or so left before Drew Thompson takes over with Les Temps Purdue. There are some things like parenting rights, child custody, that many people would say that hasn't been fixed. That's still quite unfair. Mm-hmm. What's the woman's perspective on that?
In 30 seconds or less, we have a long way to go on child custody and where people are, and especially in terms of just equity, access to attorneys, access to the system for low-income folks who are trying to make a reasonable division of their property or their you know, child custody. It's completely broken. The system's still very broken, and I think that men and women would agree with that. But I think that if men tend to still have the financial resources, they tend to then have some rights in court that I think are very tricky.
All right, ladies, thank you so much for being here today. There's plenty of topics we could still continue with, but maybe I can invite the both of you back if I didn't wasn't as much of a male jerk as
not at all.
I could have been. I
Thank
worked
you for
hard
having
at that,
us.
Turning it off for the hour.
Oh, goodness. We'd love to see it again.
You should bring it out for the next
Amy
show.
Amy Chestnut from UVA's Women's Center, Elizabeth Irvin from Charlottesville Women's Initiative. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Next week, Jim Duncan will be here as we talk about our local economy through the eyes of our real estate market. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com. or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.